Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:17 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is March 23rd. Well, the Nasdaq gapped higher this morning, then rallied for the first couple hours of the day, and then gave up most of the advance by the end of the day. And the proximate reason for that was pretty clear, that bank shares are starting to roll over again. And the S&P 500 banks index, in fact, made a new low. And then let's just think about the regional banks index. I'm definitely thinking more at the moment about regulatory arbitrage. It's the number one way that you can differentiate a business model within the financial sector, that you see what the regulations are, and then you develop a business model that circumvents them. And we see that time and again. But in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis, where not only was there an uptick in regulation and a significant number of compliance people had to be hired right across the banking sector, but then interest rates were at exceptionally low levels for an awfully long time. And that basically forced both buyers and sellers of financial products to look for alternatives or look for ways around the regulations or look for ways to profitably engage with those regulations. So, on the one hand, you had the rise of cryptocurrencies. And then let's just think about some of those companies. So Block gapped lower today because you have Hindenburg coming out with another one of their hit jobs and highlighting that the company's not really making a lot of money. And obviously, then that's problematic in a rising interest rate environment where there is obviously a risk. But Square also has plenty of cash. And at about 5 billion, and then free cash flow is positive. So it's not like the company's going out of business, it's just that they're not making as much money as everybody might like. So there's obviously the potential that the share could go down significantly from where it is right now, but then it would really require a really significant issue for the share to actually go bust. And the quantity of Bitcoin that they own is not all that large, even though the company has renamed itself Block. But of course, what cryptocurrencies are trying to do is to circumvent the payments mechanism that banks have developed. So their primary competition, in fact, are more like the credit card companies and then the banks, insofar as they do wire transfers. But as if And then, of course, there are the really big fans of the sector that promote it as an alternative to just about everything, but that's not really serious. Now, when we think about also what Alibaba did with the development of Ant Financial, well, Alibaba basically decided that they were going to start offering what are effectively savings accounts to consumers directly via their phones. And it turned into an enormously successful business. But it basically completely avoided regulation. And conventional banks in China, they have to have this huge gap between the deposit rate and the lending rate. And what basically Ant Financial did was to narrow that gap and offer much higher deposit rates. So then that very successfully accumulated deposits inside the system and turned Ant Financial into one of China's most significant financial players. Now let's th go back then and think about, well, what was it that made regional banks attractive? Well, the first thing is that they're not liable to nearly the same quantity of regulation. They don't have to hold as much capital as a percentage of their total base that the larger banks do. Then, on top of that, they offer a more customized service to their clients, and they tend to have easier lending standards than some of the bigger banks. So that's what allows them to prosper. So these, I think, are important factors. Because as interest rates rise and as financial conditions tighten, then the spread that the regulatory arbitrage market can gain narrows. And this is most particularly true for private equity. And then on top of that, what is more, I think, common now is private lending. So regional banks don't have to hold as much capital, and then they get to make more loans as a percentage of their capital. But then private institutions that don't come under banking regulations at all, well, then they can lend as much as they want. They can take on as much leverage as they want. And then they can also, because of that, they were able to offer much higher yields. Now, the trend of outsized returns, double-digit returns from the private equity sector lasted for decades. But now inflation has jumped higher. Bond yields are rising. And there's a threat that we're in a new inflationary cycle. And if that is indeed the case, well, then we're going to start to see some of the loans that were taken out at exceptionally low interest rates become problematic to refinance. And it then also, I think, would be worthwhile remembering that high yield bonds are almost never repaid. Instead, what happens is they're refinanced, or the company gets taken over, or the company goes bust. But it's exceptionally unlikely that any company that's borrowed money in the bond market is going to then have that cash to repay the loan, because they're always going to want to borrow more, or they're going to want to invest it in illiquid assets, or they're going to go off and try and expand their company even more. So there's an ongoing demand for capital. And then, of course, the refinancing cost is where the rubber meets the road. So then it's really all down to the refinancing schedule. Now, the vast majority of companies were able to refinance and stretch the maturities on their debt. And that means that there is not going to be the same waterfall effect of refinancing that we had, for example, in 2007. Now, there are plenty of mortgage holders are in that position, just not necessarily in the USA. It's more of a particular effect for the UK market, because there are so many retail investors have mortgages that refinance this year. And I think it's upwards of 70% of mortgage holders in Japan have floating rate notes. So, in the event that Japan ever begins to raise interest rates, well, then that's going to have a material effect on their economy as well. And when we think about the fact that Japan has been seeking to create inflation for a long time, well, the other side of that is that they're very much inhibited from raising interest rates. So the yen is still strengthening against the US dollar. But I think it's going to be a difficult decision, or I think it would be foolhardy to think that that's going to be the easiest currency pair to deal with. But the dollar index continues to pull back from the region of the 200-day moving average. And gold prices rebounded again in here today and are now testing the $2,000 level again. So this so far has been a really shallow consolidation. And the price is right at the upper side of the range. Now, I think it's also particularly relevant here that oil prices are pulling back from the lower side of the overhead range. So I initiated a short position today because I think that with this very clear breakdown, that it's a low-risk trade to think that oil prices could go meaningfully lower from here. Now, of course, we've had really impressive outperformance by the artificial intelligence portion of the market. And Nvidia has really done spectacularly well in the last 3 months. but it is really quite overbought. And we've also had a really impressive rebound in companies like AMD or Microsoft or Alphabet for that matter. And they all have pretty similar characteristics that they are bouncing from their respective 200-day moving averages. And this is, as far as it goes, really positive action. And it's even more so that it is really impressive relative strength. But the problem, of course, is that we have tightening monetary conditions, and interest rates are still rising, and liquidity conditions within the banking sector are problematic, and bond yields are now starting to come down. So the 10-year yield has pulled back down through the 200-day moving average. It's establishing itself now below the 3.5% level. And then let's also pay attention to the 2-year yield. And that's also pulling back down through the 4% level. So when we look at this yield curve spread, the point that I've been making now for months is that there are three phases to an inverted yield curve. And the first of those is the initial inversion. And we usually get a little wobble, but then prices rebound. And the reason for that is simple enough, that you get an inverted yield curve, and people first worry about the yield curve inverting, so they take some money off the table. But then they are comforted by the fact that interest rates are rising in response to an inflationary threat, and that central banks are doing what is necessary to bring that inflation under control. So then people relax and prices advance. But then we get to the point where the yield curve starts to move back up again. And this is when people start to worry that the Federal Reserve has done too much, that the risk now is no longer inflation, but rather that the bigger risk is deflation, that there's going to be a recession. And this is the point in the cycle we're at right now. So the next point is that the yield curve spread then moves up through zero, and investors begin to panic because now the Federal Reserve is cutting rates, and that is creating a positive slope. Now that is also going to be in response to sharply lower economic activity. And this is obviously then problematic because it's usually then when we see earnings start to come under pressure. And if we think about the stock market last year, it was really about valuation contraction. And this year, it's more about earnings and the sustainability of earnings and the sustainability of margins. And in an economic weakness or period of economic weakness, both of those factors get hit. Prices have to be adjusted, and then we see a significant drawdown. Now, the S&P 500 is pausing in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's still above the 1,000-day moving average. And we've certainly seen that the succession of lower rally highs was broken, but it has now pulled back down through the 200-day moving average. Now, in order for the bull market, or for, I guess, support building to be given the benefit of the doubt, it's going to have to hold support in the region of that 1,000-day moving average. And of course, there is the potential that it does not do that, and that the Federal Reserve has already raised rates too much, that the lagged effect of all of that tightening is going to hit the market all at once and will have a big downside economic surprise. And then that would have a really negative effect on stock prices. So I think that there is clearly potential here that the relative strength we've seen from the technology sector isn't going to last. And then the when we think about the energy sector, so it's been the best performing stock market sector for 2 consecutive years, and now it's rolling over. So the energy spider got all the way up to test the peaks from back in 2014 and 2008, and then we had this whopping downward move in May of last year. It got all the way back up to test the peak, and now it's rolling over again, and oil prices are also rolling over. So that's likely to put downward pressure on energy stocks. And since they are also one of the few sectors that are still right in the region of their peaks, well, then they have room to fall and to price in a less benign outcome. So Shell, for example, pulled back really quite sharply last week, rebounded in the early part of this week, and that is now pausing right in the region of that 200-day moving average. But this is the first time in 2 years that it has traded below the 1,000-day, or excuse me, the 200-day moving average for more than 1 week. And that's a really significant trend in consistency. And then we also have the succession of failed upside breaks. And those failed breaks are coming down in a more dynamic manner. So this is a softening up process. And there's clearly the potential that we're going to see energy shares starting to follow other major sectors lower. And then let's also pay attention to some of the primary consumer shares. And I remain of the view that Costco has top formation characteristics. That was a massive reaction against the prevailing trend in the middle of last year, and this is a period of right-hand extension. The risks are certainly to the downside. So we're still in a less than benign environment, and gold prices right in the region of their peak is starting to reignite interest in gold shares. So the gold miners ETF continues to rebound here, and relative to the gold price, it's still reasonably depressed. Then Bitcoin prices are hovering around the 30,000 level, but haven't been able to push up through it yet. Now, we did have a downward move yesterday, and it was almost completely countermanded today. But Bitcoin's a liquidity barometer. We haven't yet seen a lot of liquidity coming through. Now, what we are starting to see, though, is that China is moving to at least support its asset prices. So the H share index was in positive territory today. It's also worth remembering, I think, that there was a clear phenomenon in markets over the last 6 months that any day that Wall Street was down, the Chinese shares were up. I do think that people are playing that pairs trade. And the advertising revenue at Tencent has come in better than expected. And the share is firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. It hasn't run away just yet, and it might not, given the potential for downside in the wider equity markets. But certainly, the upper dynamic today is confirmation of some support coming through in the region of the 200-day moving average. I'm very cautious, and I've been more happy to open shorts than longs. I think that there is not really a lot to be gained by chasing in this environment, that one will certainly be rewarded for patience, and having more cash than normal is really not a bad idea in this environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.